the ARC-5 40-meter receiver, basically. What I ultimately ended up doing was running a piece of, someone gave me like 6 precious inches of Teflon coax, like RG-58 in Teflon, and I soldered 2 of the terminals inside the case, the antenna terminals, the solder, the coax, and then the other side had a connector on it that I used a double male UHF connector to get the input, or no, double male, no, it's probably a BNC, but something like that for my Tekraft, for the IF side. But that was wonderful, and so I worked all sorts of things. I ended up working probably, like you, maybe 11, 12, 13, 14 states on AM, and the problem is everybody was going sideband at that point, but if you remember back then, technicians couldn't operate below 145, so technicians operate DX'd at 145, and the real hams DX'd at 144, so that changed later on, and by then I had access to a sideband rig. It was kind of cool. All right, anybody else?
W2IX, Whiskey 2, India X-ray.
W2IX, your name and your location, and then go right ahead.
Yeah, good evening. This is Frank, F-R-A-N-K, Frank, W2IX. We're in Carmel in Putnam County. My radio was on scan, and I heard you speaking, and I believe Howie is there also. But I don't recognize your call. Your voice sounds familiar, but not your call. K2EIR. The Howie I knew was, that I know, is WB2PUI. Howie, did you change your call?
Yes, I got a vanity call.
Yep, my original call was WB2 Tango Uniform Tango, and I lived in the Bronx. And I just had 2 comments. I'm not sure what the kind of net this is, but you were talking about New Vista transmitters. I have somewhere down in the basement, a Mico 2-meter New Vista converter that will allow me to receive on 2 meters on my Hamelin HQ110. Let me let it drop. And a bit of trivia, I was looking through June 1969 QST, and I noticed that was the heyday of putting ads in the magazine. There was about 4 or 5 pages of ads in the magazine, you know, classified. And what I found, which may be amusing to you, Howie, is I found you were selling 2 different things on two separate classifieds on different pages. That was interesting. W2IX.
And if I may, this is K2EIR, formerly WB2PUI. Yes, I grew up in the Bronx, and we've talked before, Frank, and I always need this refresher. I went off in the fall of 1969 to graduate school in Michigan and stayed 10 years. But I can't remember. I knew I wanted to get rid of some of my stuff. Do you happen to remember or can tell me from reading what it was I was selling?
Yes. Let's see here. Boy, my eyes are getting bad. Can't read the tiny print. Let's see here. A 2 Nancy Blanca. I guess Noise Blanca for sale. $12. That was one. And the other one was, I don't know if you want me to read this. It has to do with looking for employment.
That doesn't sound like me.
Job wanted, summer. Beginning graduate student, hold PA. Should I continue?
Like you, Howie.
Does sound like me. Actually, you don't have to continue. What happened was, I think that summer I got a job as a camp counselor, a ham radio camp counselor in New Hampshire, and I hauled all my equipment up there, an HT-32, as I recall, I'm not sure if that was, yeah, I think it was an HT-32, which weighed about 100 pounds. It cost me a fortune to get my stuff back at the end of the summer. Well, most of my camp earnings. Wow. It's a small world, isn't it, Frank?
W2IX. Yes, it is. Yep. And it looks like all roads lead to the Bronx. I didn't catch the other person's name or call. I'll say good evening to you. My name is Frank. W2IX, formerly WV2TUT, and even Kilo Delta 2 India X-ray was my advance call. Over to you.
With all the musical chairs on calls, we've all worked each other before, Frank. I recognize your voice immediately. My old calls were, in reverse order, N2 Delta Sierra Yankee, November 2 Delta Sierra Yankee, November 2 Delta Sierra Yankee contest, remember that? Anyway, and then, calling CQ on 6 or 2 or 432 or 220 or whatever, 903, 1206, wherever we happen to be. And then, before that it was WB2 Charlie Alpha Mike, WB2 Charlie Alpha Mike, over, over.
I recall the DSY call, yeah, for the mid to late 90s, late 90s to the early zeros, I guess you call them. I was also very big into VHF, UHF contesting. I was part of the Hudson Watershed VHF Society, and we've operated at, on the other side of the Hudson, was near Route 17, Bear Mountain. Columbia University has a observatory there, and we used that environment to operate a contest. It was kind of high in elevation. Did very well with contesting there. And also down in a place called South Mountain, a certain amount of miles, about 20, 30 miles east or west of Gettysburg. And that site was tremendous. Let me let it drop. The site in south central Pennsylvania was amazing. I worked just about 432 during the whole contest, and never before in my life I had ever had a score with 55 grids on 432, W2IX.
Besides the height, do you know why you had 55, and a decent station, do you know why you had 55 grids from down there? There's actually a good reason.
There was a bunch of good people setting up the stations and the antennas and aligning this and aligning that. A tremendous amount of manpower. And I'm basically an operator, not really. Some people build the great stations, other people operate them, and some people build and operate the great stations. This was a site, I think, originally from another group down in the D.C. area, I believe, I was told. Had this location, but got rid of it, and somebody in Massachusetts picked it up.
That's correct. Okay, so what the real reason why that works so well, besides all the human aspects that you mentioned very generously, is that you can turn the antenna a number of different ways and find activity in 55 grids. You reach a point where you're either too far north or too far south or too far east, and you just can't do that. There is, you know, there's water or you know, wasteland, you know?
Well, it was pretty high up. I'm not sure what the numbers were, but it was pretty good. Another excellent place is where the Pearl Repeat is located. There used to be an old camp house, I guess you would call it, made out of wood, like a log cabin. But I think the log cabin was used by the guy that takes care of New York State land. Not a trooper, I forgot what you call it. Anyway, we got permission to operate a VHF contest, I think in 1992. 92? Is that possible? Yeah, 92 or 93. at that location. It was just fantastic also.
And besides your call sign, what call signs did your group use?
Most of the contests were done in the Hudson Valley, either on the other side of the Hudson or this side of the Hudson, east side. It was WB2IEY, India Echo Yankee. And I think the one in...
I'm sorry, what was the one in Pennsylvania? Well, he went away. All right, well, that was interesting. Anybody else have VHF contest or DX anecdotes?
W2CH.
Right ahead, Ray.
Yeah, I say hello if Frank comes back. I just saw him at the QSY meeting Saturday. I know him quite a few years. I know that group K2TVI from people at WECA did a lot of contests a while back, and it's a group that does well, Grid Pirate, usually K8 from West Virginia work when I get down there. I know back on 2 meter AM I got down to Virginia, North Carolina, Northern Vermont, and New Hampshire, you know, like Howie was saying back in those days. And once I had a good amount of contacts and got first place single operator with my old call, which was WA2ZPD, and then in Arizona I was WB7EGN, in Connecticut WB1BTO, and once in Antigua V25CH.
Operates 6 or 2 meters from Antigua?
No, I took that heavy FT-897 and just operated the HF, you know, really 20 and up with some dipoles at the Sandals Resort there for just during 1 week. And so I did not get on any VHF like 6 to tell you about that. But I was working at N2JBA back home on 10 meters, and I was talking to him on the telephone just to coordinate it.
W2IX back.
Go ahead. We'd like to hear the call of the Pennsylvania operation. That's where you dropped.
I must have a high SWR when I have the radio on 55 watts. So I'm about 25 now, and hopefully it won't crap out. N3 Echo Mike Foxtrot, N3 EMF. But there were other calls on different occasions used by, I think Yellow Traffic Line, K3YTL, operated a few times from there also.
I was wondering if EMF and YTL used the same sites ever. Because I did notice contest over contest, and sometimes I had this identical beam heading. I had some arrays that were very, very precise. I used to operate from the state line lookout here in Alpine, and that was very, very cool. That was an FN30, and half of the reason for putting up with that site and having to deal with all the logistics that were involved in getting there and using it and sustaining yourself was the fact that you were in FN30. People wanted to work you. So I often was the only station that was on for the whole contest from FN30, especially one that was doing other than, let's say, K2OVS would operate one band, or KTRIW would operate one band, but often not the whole contest.
I didn't get your call or your name, and I do apologize, and I think I heard Ray, W2CH, talking there when the radio came back on. Well, he sounds like him.
That was Ray, and he is definitely here, and I am Gordon, W2TTT, or N2 Delta Sierra Yankee, or WB2 Charlie Alpha Mike, whatever call sign you found. Oddly enough, WB2CAM has been picked up as a vanity call. Who would ever thought that? But Carol A. Montgomery, who lives, I think, out in the wilds of Kansas with her husband, both have WB2 calls ending in Mike.
Yeah, okay, Gordon, very good. W2IX here. Yep. Your call, you don't sound that old, so your call was probably issued the late 60s, early 70s?
God bless you, my friend. I will be 55 years old next month, in just over a month, actually, from now. And, my call was issued. I wasn't the first issue WB2CM. I was the second issue. I had been given to somebody and it expired or whatever. But anyway, I got my license in July or August, depending on which one it is. Novice or tech, I think. Well, yeah, in 1975, I do know that. So I am crawling up on 40 years as a ham, 38 years. God, I remember when I was, yeah, never mind, I'm not going to start that, but good Lord, yep. I was 17 years old when I got my license, and I passed my test when I was 16. But back then, it took the best part of a year to physically get the ticket in your hand, because the way the licensing process worked back then, you threw, you know, you basically went to somebody who agreed to give you the test, and they would send in the application that you filled out and the money. The commission would mail them the exam. They would administer the test for the technician or the novice before that, and then wait some period of time before you got that test, and then you would send that. They would send the test back in, and then you had to find out later. They couldn't grade it themselves, and the gentleman who did both of those tests for me did not give me a clue as to whether I passed, other than the Morse code parts. If you remember back in those days, the code requirement for novice and tech was not the same. They both were 5 words a minute, but the novice was letters and numbers only, and the technician was letters, numbers, punctuation, and prosigns. So anyway, so that's my story in so many words. All right. Anybody else?
IX again. So what repeater is this? I'm familiar with it, but I'm not sure who it belongs to. And,
it's K2ETN repeat. It also has a 440.900 at the same site. You might try that at your convenience. And it's in Alpine, New Jersey. It's in the scout camp near the Alpine Tower.
Okay, very good. And, Howie, is there a special meaning for Ohm's Law for you?
Well, the story behind my, this K2EIR, behind my present call is I wanted something shorter, and even though I don't operate much CW at all, let me paraphrase that, I don't operate CW at all, that doesn't mean I won't. I wanted something easy to send on CW if I was going to get a new call. You know, after all, you always know your 40-year-old call, right? You never forget, or almost never forget. So E, I, and R were short letters, and I was told not to get repetition, so I didn't want E. And, you know, it also depended what was available, and I loved the idea that it was Ohm's Law, voltage, current, and resistance. So that's why I submitted for it.
Yep, it's amazing. Yep. My first call was WN2TUT. That was I got the license in July of 1965. Howie, I think you probably got your license around the same year, maybe 1964. Everything went by alphabetical order: T, Q, R, S, and then T. I know the WB2s didn't last long, maybe 3 or 4 years before they ran out of calls. And then they started reusing the old calls, the WA, WB, W2s, and everything else that was available, either through expiration or death in the family or what have you. But, yeah. Well, anyway, I just wanted to throw that information out there. It's funny that just a couple of weeks ago, I was going through some old QSTs, and I'm trying to thin out my collection. I usually keep ones that have contest results in that I was involved with and this was one issue that I did. And noticing that there's less than a page of advertisements in the current QSTs, I found it amazing that back then, just about everything that had to be sold was sold that way through this ad program they had in the back of the QSTs. W2IX.
Yeah, well, I guess the internet changed everything. This is really Gordon's Net. I don't know how much it's still operating since it's gotten pretty late and when I was off on single sideband, but Gordon should describe it to you. It's on the repeater, by the way, is the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club repeater, and you do it, Gordon. I don't want to steal your show. K2EIR.
I was going to happily continue to solder, but okay. Yes, this net runs weekly. It's a technical net, but it's really about amateur radio and anything related to the hobby, basically, is fine. And so it's always wonderful to have people pop in and make some noise and occasional bits of reminiscing. We don't do that very often, so that was kind of fun to do. So I appreciate your coming in. I really do. God knows we worked enough times, Frank, both in normal times and also during contests, VHF contests in particular. The thing about about operating where I used to operate from, in the very western edge of FN30, up about 600 feet above, pardon me, overlooking the Hudson, at 630 feet above sea level, was that you didn't have access to gas, to heat. You had no access to electricity. You had no access to restrooms in many years, and certainly not after about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and before 9 or 10. So you had to be very creative as to how you handle these matters. And, you know, if it snowed a lot, you had to think about how you, or it was just bitter cold, you had to do that. And I operated QRP Portable, which, if you might recall, was a single operator exercise, one person, no support, at least on the ham radio side. Occasionally, a friend of mine would come up in June or September into AYJ, and he would make breakfast for me and make sure that I had, like, extra fluids and stuff like that, bring up additional gas. But everything from personal security issues to just staying warm, or warm enough to operate, where was a chore. I remember one January we actually operated from a pop-up tent, and Stan and his son and I operated together. And that was kind of fun, but boy, it was cold. We couldn't get the pop-up tent to be, you know, it was a pop-up kind of trailer thing. Could never get it to be warm. We had 3,000 watts of heaters in our ankles, and we might as well have just left the door open. It just didn't matter. But we kept up working. Anyway, so that's good. Anybody else have any adventures of hilltopping and mountaintopping and things like that?
W2CA.
Go ahead, Mr. A.
Well, I did a lot of times parts of the contest, but in good weather up at Bear Mountain with portable rigs. I had the Yaesu, what was that, 609, I forget the model numbers. Those portables that were a few watts that would run 6 meters and 2 meters back 30-some years ago, you know, the Mark II or whatever, 290R, 690R, they made the UHF version too. And I had a small amplifier in the battery for 2 meters, a 4-element beam on 2, a trick stick or some cushcraft thing for a 6-meter dipole kind of stick antenna, and then I've been up on Slide Mountain in the Catskill, which takes about 2 hours to hike up and operate from there, and worked out also, have hilltopped at Lake George Prospect Mountain. That was just a few years back. let's see, another station went up there. We've got relative WB2SIH up in Armagh, who's active in the contest, will be next, the week after next, I'm sure. And let me see, what else? Oh, yes, and then Becerra, the Club Peekskill Cortland. We did Bear Mountain at first for field day, and the first year we were in the thunderstorm.
Yeah, I think all the times I was up in State Line, they only had to deal with lightning once. And I secured the antennas outside. I had a prearranged system for that. All the coaxes would go outside. All the power cords would go outside. And they went into a Rubbermaid tub that had holes in the side to accommodate the cables, and basically act as a big rain cover for them. And so I wanted no external wires coming in, and I almost achieved that. I actually never brought in the rotator cables, or brought out and sent out the rotator cables, but I would unplug the rotators from anything that they were connected to, whether it was just a power bus or anything else, and I would put them on a rubber mat away from wherever I was, just in case. I wanted to make sure that they were closer to the ground than anything that I had handy. So they came in low, and they went, and the thing stayed low, and I never had any issues. But I know Barris, the chase off the hill there on up at the Nike base in Orangeburg a number of times because of lightning, and it gets to be interesting. Really does. All righty. Anybody else? Go ahead, Howie.
Okay, I just wanted to let Frank know, yes, I was licensed in 1964. He raised that before. And I just want to ask one question, since we have you, Gordon, and Ray, and Frank all from the same vintage and area. But I lost track, because one of the things you talk about going down and topping or whatever, I went up with WA2RAT and WB2QLM near Albany, and we put up a 50-foot tower and operated 6 meters for the June VHF contest. And I don't remember, it was somewhere in the late 60s. But when I went off to grad school, I lost track of Buzz, WB2QLM, Buzz Burnback. And Buzz wasn't his real first name. Do any of you know what happened to Buzz, WB2 Quebec, Lima, Mike?
Sounds familiar.
No, I don't. I don't know the call either.
Sorry, Holly, I don't remember.
Okay, yeah, I lost track of him, and he didn't keep the call, and I couldn't find him by name. You know, I looked for him a few years back. But then again, you know, 1969 or earlier, you know, somewhere between 64 and 69, it's a long way back. Well, God bless all of us. We're still living and still doing ham radio, and it's a wonderful fraternity. I've got to get up around 4:30 in the morning, and I promised my daughter I'd do some dishes if she baked the cake. And she baked the cake, so I've got to get off the air and go do the dishes. Frank, it's great hooking up with you again. You do that from time to time, and I'm happy about that. Thank you. Gordon, thank you for the net, great net again. And Ray, thanks for being my friend for 40-something years. 73, guys, K2EIR.
Okay, very good. No problem. Does anybody else have any questions or comments from that? Did I forget anybody?
AC21KU.
Carol Ann, go ahead.
Only woman on the net. 88.
88 to you too, Marilyn. Anybody else? Yeah, that was kind of an unusual departure from our normal thing, but I guess it's a little sentimental over VHF contest and anticipating VHF contest. My first VHF contest, by the way, was January of 1976 from 155 East 76th Street in Manhattan. And I built a pair of four-element collinear, horizontal collinear antennas so bidirectional, and they were made out of wire and television cord. And I didn't have a soldering iron, so I tied the wire in knots, I kid you not, to make the thing work, and I had some light nylon twine or something like that, some sort of, you know, something like parachute cord or whatever, and I just suspended it between poles in the elevator and water tower enclosure on top of my apartment building. And I operated from the top of the stairwell leading up to the bottom of the water tank and ran a cord up from the main area, at roof level. So I was about maybe, my antennas are maybe 35, 40 feet above a 150-foot building. Of course, it was on the east side of Manhattan. So I made about half a dozen contacts to New England and one or two in New Jersey and a couple in Long Island. So maybe I made a dozen or so contacts on each of 6 or 2 meters. And that was kind of neat. Definitely kind of neat. Again, I was cold because I had the door at the top of the stairs open to accommodate the coax. I had the door at the bottom of the stairs, open so I could run power from the hallway. So I would quietly, I did that quietly one night. And I do remember going to a ham station up in the East 80s, maybe 3rd Avenue and 86th Street or so. Guy had a nice HF station in his apartment, but he also had a pair of Kenwood radios. He had a 700 and a 600, and I think they were the digital ones. So I don't know if the digital ones were out there. Maybe they were analog. But they were the TS-700, TS-600. Boy, I was envious. He had real antennas. I put a set of headphones on and listened around, and he said, anything you can hear, I've already worked. And I started spitting out call signs. He would nod, it would nod, it would nod. After about 5 minutes, he actually...
Repeater. Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
Yeah, you should shoot me. I got excited. So anyway, it was very cool. And I got the bug early. I operated either January, June, or September from the time I got my license for a number of years in one capacity or other, and usually on some hilltop somewhere. And then later on, took a little few years off and had, family and kids and stuff like that. When kids were little, I started to operate a little bit in the late 80s, early 90s. Right up to about 96 or so, I was very active. My father died. My wife actually sent me up to operate the June VHF contest with the group after we buried my dad on September 11th. So Saturday after September 11th, 1996. So that was the VHF contest weekend. So anyway, very cool. Anyway, anybody else?
Mr. Thomas.
Okay, Frank.
Was your first 2 meter station crystal controlled or VFO?
It depends on what you mean by station. If you mean FM, which was in fact what I had first on 2 meters, it was crystal controlled. It was a Motorola P33 with the large inverter and the big huge Mungo battery pack, and that operated on 5.2 and 146.73, which was a repeater first in Lower Manhattan, then in Brooklyn. And then that's the way it came. And then later on I had a TR-22C, which I bought used. And later I had Nikon 215, which I bought new, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, Roger. Boy, it brings back a lot of memories. I got on VHF on 2 meters, I think in 1967. I wasn't very impressed with, the sunspot conditions 2 years prior to that, back in 65 and 66, and I decided to try VHF, I heard a lot about it, but I didn't know anybody that really was involved with 2 meters. So I built one of those heat kit tours, which was good if you weren't in an area that had a lot of hams, because the receiver was so broad. So that's where I bought the... And I think the antenna I used on 2 meters was an 11-element high gain, wide space, 2 meter beam, 11 elements. And that was very, very good. It made my 5 watts sound nicer to a lot of hams out there. I think I operated a few contests, maybe 4 or 5 in the late 60s, before I got a homebrew 2 meter transmitter that I put together along with a very dear ham friend of mine, Phil, WB2JTI, Julian Tango, India. He was pretty common on during the VHF contest on 2 meters, 432. He was up high in Manhattan. I was in the Bronx, on the East Bronx, between Pelham Parkway and Park Chester. And all I was able to put up is a 2 meter beam. There weren't restrictions, but there were tenants that complained about having these wires and these antennas all over the place. W2IX.
Yeah, that was my problem in my apartment. It wasn't allowed, but if no one complained, no one bothered. And I became part of the superintendent and assistant superintendent's normal survey process to see what I had done lately so they could make it go away. Anyway, we operate here 9 o'clock every Thursday night, and you're welcome to come in, operate, and work us, and please do. We have a nice conversation about ham radio, and the topics vary widely. By the way, in the middle of all that, I also got a, I had a Mohawk receiver and a Marauder transmitter, so I was ready as a novice, to say the least. Had slightly more than 75 watts, grin, grin, in my New York City apartment in the summer of 1975. And then I got the TR-106 and TR-108. One I bought from K2ABA, who's now N2NY, if I remember right. And the other was bought from Harrison Radio downtown in Manhattan. Anyway, anybody else have anything for the net? Otherwise, I think we'll secure. Okay, I want to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club and all you nice folks for checking in tonight. Don't be a stranger, and please have a great evening. This is KTBAR W2TTT, off and clear at 673, and we'll see you next week.
73 to everyone for listening. W2IX, out for now. Good luck in the contest.
73, have a good one. W2TTT.
82CRB.
Thank you for checking in and your questions, Stu. That was a good question tonight.
And thank you for all the info. Have a good evening.
Problem, I was one-handed for a minute and I was trying to do something that required two. All right, 73 and God bless. K2CRB W2TTT, off and clear for now. Thank you.